you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Today I'm talking with Kobe Ryan McLaughlin. I have had the pleasure of sharing the screen with this guy twice, and it's terrible, because he's so ridiculously handsome. It's just unfair. Nobody should look like that. The worst part, he's one of the greatest guys to work with, which explains why he's been able to build a successful acting career over the past 20 years. We talk being a soap opera villain, how great it is to be hated, revealing yourself to Kelly Monaco, and so much more. So don't go nowhere. Oh. And please excuse the intermittent banging. My guest was unaware that he kept pounding the desk by the microphone. It happens.
Oh my God. Look at that.
Hello!
Look at that.
Hey, buddy!
Look at you. What's going on?
You're looking at it.
See? We have 6 years of catching up to do.
Wow, that was 6 years ago.
Can you believe that?
The past 6 years, Jesus.
Right? Right.
A lot of things have happened in the past 6 years.
I'm going to tell you that you have a lot to live up to. I mean, I've had guests that have been to prison. I have guests that have gone through like major life catastrophes and overcome. So you've got a lot to live up to in this interview. I mean, you're soap opera handsome. You've got six pack abs. I don't know what people are going to get and feel connected to you in some way. You're not like a real person.
Jesus. Well, you know, I'm not. And that was our interview. And there we go. Boom. Done.
We're done. So first of all, I think you should talk about the joys of working with me.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The joys of working with Brian LaFontaine. Just the name actually conjures images of matinee. Brian LaFontaine. Welcome everybody. Mr. Brian, I get to see you in a red velvet leisure suit with a comb over. Oh my God, I just created a character. I totally went someplace with you in my mind.
So, Kobe Ryan McLaughlin, where may we have seen you?
Oh, Brian, you would have seen me if you watched television.
Certainly.
You would have seen me in shows such as Graceland. Mm-hmm. I did the second season of Graceland. I was on it all season. I did the last season of Parenthood.
Yes, you did.
I did a number of motion pictures, two of which you and I were a part of together.
Yes.
I've done a show called Mike and Molly. I've done The X-Files. I've been all over.
There is.
And now yes. I'm on General Hospital.
So folks, for anybody who's listening, I am talking to my good friend Kobe Ryan McLaughlin, who you may have seen as Crazy Ass Shiloh on General Hospital. You worked on The Young and the Restless for a while as Andrew.
I did.
And then you've done like every NCIS under the sun.
Yes.
You've seen him on The Crossing, Kingdom, Castle, Parenthood, Graceland, 2 and a Half Men, CSI New York, 90210, Women's Murder Club?
Yeah. That was a little gem that we did back in 2007 with Angie Harmon and
four other women.
That didn't get along.
and yes, and two heartwarming classics, Saving Westbrook High and Mountaintop,
yes.
which we were
yes.
in together,
yes.
along with a host of others. You've been in all kinds of stuff. You've been doing this for a long time. General Hospital, when you told me, when you and I just checked in with each other last year, when it started, you said that wasn't it supposed to be a 3-year deal?
It was supposed to be a 3-year deal. It's, you know, it's kind of, I can't say anything because I don't want to give away any spoilers. It's an interesting gig, man. I've never done anything quite like it. I've never I've never done anything that's challenged me as much or has intimidated me so much. Dude, it's a fucking trip, man. Like, you have to step up to the plate in such a ways that it makes me sweat. Like, I've had anxiety attacks.
Are you serious?
Dude, like that insecure 13-year-old, or actually go back to the insecure 20-year-old actor when you just started, that guy,
Yeah.
and then throwing five cameras on him.
Wow.
It's just like,
I worked on a soap once. I worked on As the World Turns for one day when I was living in New York, and I had no idea what that soap opera monster was like. And I was completely blown away about how it operates. And it wasn't until that experience where I was actually able to sit back and say and realize, holy shit, this is the only TV series that is on 5 days a week. It's an hour long. There are no reruns, and it's on 52 weeks a year. The workload is just insane. I mean, I always thought it was big, but until you see it, you can't comprehend what you guys have to do.
Oh no, and that was how long ago?
That was like 10 years ago. I
Right.
worked on that, yeah.
And now it's twice as fast, and they shoot three shows a day.
How can it get any faster?
They shoot my day last week, last Friday was that we had 130 pages. We shot 130 pages
In a day?
in one day, and that's normal.
Oh
One
my
third,
God.
one yeah, 130 is a little much.
Right.
Usually, it's between 103 and 120.
Because I found that, you had said that in another interview that I looked up and checked out, where you said you were intimidated with daytime TV. And I was like, I got to ask you about that. Like, what? Tell me about what makes it intimidating, aside from the
Dude,
130 pages.
it's a motherfucker. It's a freight train,
Yeah.
and you can't be the asshole. And everybody goes. It's literally like when you see like Olympic sprinters and they're getting ready,
Yep.
and they they get on their they get on the blocks and they're about to go, and then they fire that gun and then off they go. You get a countdown,
Yep.
and you get one rehearsal. You get a blocking rehearsal that usually happens sometimes 2, 3 hours prior,
Right.
and you do it once, and you have to write all your shit down and know where to go, and you have to make it pretty, you have to be fairly precise because you've
Yeah.
got five cameras on you and you can't block. And then they count it down, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you go.
Right.
And then you're off. And then you get two takes with, sometimes 8 pages of continuous dialogue.
Yeah.
With just paragraphs of shit, sometimes expository shit. You're like, you walk up to the fucking AD and be like, or the director, I'm like, hey man, like, why? So what was it? Oh, we don't know. Just say it. I'm like,
It.
yeah, I
No.
don't know what that. Okay, all right. And then they somehow make it work.
Are there any cheating methods in there that we don't know about? Are there any sort of cue cards, teleprompters, anything to help you
No.
guys out? No.
No, you get nothing. What you get is like if you ever see a set, this I'll tell you, the most scared a daytime actor is on set is when there's nowhere to hide a script. So if you see like you're just like an interrogation room and there's like nothing,
Yes.
we're probably sitting on it. Like or
Okay.
like behind every pillow, behind every lamp, in every drawer is a script.
Because I would think that it's like, then obviously you're not sleeping. If you're finishing one shoot day and you got to go home and learn, say, 60 pages for the next day, I don't care how good you are. There's no way that you're keeping all that stuff straight once you
Oh,
walk in there the
dude.
next day.
Dude, it's I re-upped my fucking Adderall prescription and I took a lot of coffee. Like it's I shit you not. Like
I
it's
believe you.
crazy. Like
Right.
I'll finish a day and then I'll go in, I'll take my makeup off, and I'll sit in my dressing room and I'll just look over the shit for the next day. I'll stay there for about an hour and a half sometimes, and read everything for the next day. And then I take it home and I make dinner and hang out with the kid when I have her, and I'll put her to bed and I'll pour a glass of wine and I'll just fucking sit there and go over my shit and go over my shit.
What's that doing for you now? Because you obviously started thinking, okay, great, I've got 3 years, and then you
Oh,
got one.
dude. No, I'm good. I'm
Are you
so
really?
good. I'm
Yeah.
so good. 9 months. I had 9 months. The character just got so diabolical. They'd written him so nasty.
Right.
that after I like, you know, raped Kelly Monaco and fucking tattooed a whole bunch of gods and, you know, stole a fucking kid to transplant memories into, like, abducted a child. Finally, they were like, I got a call. They're like, yeah, sorry, we're not going to re-up. I'm like, you know what? I'm good. This was a count. Thank you for the ride. This was fun. It's really intense, man.
Sure.
It's an intense process. So, no, I had a great time. I'm glad to have it on my resume. I'm glad to have done it. I'm really looking forward to getting back to episodic stuff.
Excellent. So yeah. Let me ask you this. How many times did you have to cook spaghetti or answer the door with your shirt off?
You know what? Only a handful of times.
Yeah.
I got lucky. Although the first few episodes, the first few months I was there, I was shirtless, I think, three or four times. Getting out of the shower. Like, I had to say, there was something I got... One of the episodes, I have to just stand there. I'm going to indoctrinate Sam, who's played by Kelly Monaco. And I have to indoctrinate her into my cult. And I take my shirt off and she goes, what are you doing? And I say, I'm revealing myself to you. And then I say, reveal yourself to me, Sam. And I'm like, I got this. And I walked into her dressing room and I was like, what the fuck? Well, how do I do this? She's like, relax. We'll just take this. We'll make it work.
Excellent. Oh my God.
But yeah, it's interesting.
Now, what happens while you're shooting if, you know, God forbid, there's some kind of train wreck? You know?
Oh, they cut.
They do.
Cut.
Okay.
What they used to do though, once a year, was they would go live. And once a year, they would go old school and they would do a live show.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which was crazy.
Yes.
Because all bets are off.
Right.
And if you go up or if you fuck up,
you're done. Right.
No, you just got to.
Well, like theater. It's like theater.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You just got to keep moving.
Yes.
So they don't do that anymore. Which there was a part of me that was like, oh wow, that I could just like, what if I went totally off the, like, I had these fantasies about just going totally off the rails.
Yeah, having the Tootsie moment.
Yes. Yes. Having the, or the soap dish moment.
Yes. It seems that it gave you all of a sudden this huge recognition and fan base. I mean, you were the villain that everyone loved to hate.
It's incredible. And they're such sweet people. I went to my first fan event a couple of weeks ago and I walked in the door and it was like the Beatles. It was fucking nuts, dude.
That's amazing.
It was lovely. They're really lovely fans. They're awesome.
So let me ask you about that then. So again, the premise of the show is, you may have seen, and you've had a pretty successful career, all things considered, I think in the grand scheme of things, where you've been able to keep it going one way or another for, you know, 20 plus years. Now, all of a sudden, General Hospital comes along and throws you, boom, to some extent, into the spotlight. How was that experience for you all of a sudden to have these, to go from being a guy who could walk down the street and nobody really give a shit about, to having all these people going, yay! You know,
it's rad.
Yeah.
It's awesome, dude. Like, I get stopped in Target all the time because that's, you know, I'm now a single, being a single father, it's where I spend most of my time. It's in Target. So I get stopped all the time and people, it's rad. I love it, but I like that shit. But I like it. It's fun.
Was that a goal for you along the way? Were you hoping that you got to that point?
I think maybe subconsciously. Yeah. But I just like bringing people joy. Like I like being able to sit there and talk to somebody. And I always said that one of the greatest parts about being an actor and being in our line of work is the fact that we get to touch people on a level that we'll never meet.
Yeah.
And we get to elicit an emotion from those individuals. And I get to do that. And then not only do I get to do that, I get to meet those people. I just randomly will walk up and go, hey man, like I saw the show. Like, wow, you're, Jesus, what a bad motherfucker. This dude walked up to me. I was at the Hollywood Bowl seeing a concert, and this guy stopped me, and he just put his arm around me, and I was like, huh? And he's like, man, you're a bad motherfucker.
Wow.
I was like, ah, thanks. And he's like, yeah, I really enjoy what you're doing. I'm like, right on. It's great. People dig it.
And I love that guys are watching General Hospital still.
You never know. Dude, there is no demographic for this show. I have had people in their 30s. I have had people in their 70s. Mm-hmm. I have had every walk of life, dude. Everybody.
I interviewed a guy a couple months ago, and he had done, I think he was on The Young and the Restless back in the early 70s. It was one of his first jobs, and I guess he was on there for a handful of months, similar to you. And Several years later, he was one of the guys that got arrested, and he like he's one of the last people that should ever be in prison, you know. So he said that he ended up getting prison protection from a skinhead, the head of the skinheads in prison, because the dude recognized him from the soap opera. He got recognized by the head of the skinheads in prison, and he wanted to take acting lessons from him. He ex in exchange for protection in prison.
That's epic.
So think, just think, you've got that in your hip pocket in case you ever need it.
Dude, if I ever go to the fucking joint and somebody walks up to me and is like, "Yo, dude, I loved you as Shiloh," I'll be like, "Oh,
I'm good.
See, this job may have saved my life."
And how much fun was it to play this dude who was so out there?
Great.
Yeah.
You get all your inner asshole out, man. It's like if I had a bad day, all I have to do is I get to go to work and I just get to be horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like all of those crazy reptilian impulses that we have, I get to actually reenact them and get them out, which is cool. It's a lot of fun. I always like playing bad guys, and before they started writing him the way they were writing him, I thought it was a lot of fun to kind of go the opposite way
Of
and play
course.
him as somebody that, you know, I'm not a bad guy. I'm doing what I have to do, and these are the reasons why I'm doing it.
Exactly.
So I always thought the best bad guys were people who perhaps you just didn't quite understand why they were doing what they were doing, and they were trying to find a way to redeem themselves. But
Absolutely. I think it's your job to make people feel sympathy for you.
yes, I want them to like me.
Yes. Or at least to
You know?
understand why you're misunderstood.
Yeah, now no, now all bets are off. Now I'm just an
Well,
asshole. And a punching bag, dude. I get beat up by fucking everybody.
I went online and I looked and I found a few clips and
Did you see
I
that?
saw I saw one of the shirtless scenes. I saw you get, I had to laugh because this guy was like half your size and I was like that would never happen.
Oh, dude.
The guy who was the doctor who pinned you up against the elevator door, it was like
Oh,
that
yeah.
dude's my size.
Dude. So one of my fans put together like the Shiloh punching bag compilation on
Right.
Twitter, and they put it to that song, "I Get Knocked Down, But I Get Up Again." You should find it. It's really fucking funny.
I'll definitely look for
It's
that.
hilarious.
You made it onto the cover of Soap Opera Digest a couple times.
Three
Three
times,
times.
three times. It was great. It's a really weird level of celebrity where you're known, but you're not really known. You're like known to a select group of people. And it's cool, man. I fucking, like I said, I one of the reasons why I've always wanted to do this was so I can get out and tell stories and just be part of the fabric
Yeah.
of this whole thing. And that's all part of the thing. So I dig it, man. I don't understand how people kind of poo-poo the experience,
I don't
you
know
know.
either. I mean, was this something that you were open to from the beginning? Were you just like, "Hey, if the soap comes my way, great," or when you first started out, were you more like, "I'm not ready"?
No, I never wanted to do daytime.
Yeah.
But it was getting to the point where commercially I wasn't working as much anymore because, as you know, commercials just aren't what commercials used to be.
They're
So,
not.
you know, that was always my bread and butter. And I would go out and I'd get recurring or I'd get a season on a show or, you know, and I would just keep humping. But the thing that always kind of kept me afloat was I would do five, six, seven commercials a year.
You were the rooms to go guy for a long time.
God, it was great. Those people, that was amazing, and it kept me in, you know, able to do that. Well, that kind of started to slow down, and when that slowed down, I was like, "The fuck am I gonna do now? Like, I gotta pay my mortgage." So it was a job. I took a job.
That's awesome. This is a great job. I mean,
Yeah, it's a great
I was
job.
really, I truly was. I was so excited for you when you sent me that message, and you were like, "I'm going to be busy for a while working at a General Hospital." Because I mean, the soap, as you know, the soaps are it's a dying art form. There's very few left.
It's really a shame. And they give you no budget.
Oh,
They
really?
have no, yeah, they have no interest. One of the reasons why we go so
Yeah.
fast and we're pinned to the wall all the time is because there's no money and they've got to get in what they can get in.
Right.
And I mean, if you think about it, it used to be this huge thing. Dude, this used to be the biggest medium in the world. In the 80s, you had people like fucking Liz Taylor on General Hospital.
Wow, I don't remember that, but I mean, I remember General Hospital in the 80s, the whole Luke and Laura era.
Dude, and she's still there, by the way. Lovely lady, Jeannie Francis.
My only connection to Jeannie Francis is that I worked with her. I think she's still married to Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
He directed me in an episode of a show a couple years ago. Great guy. Great, great guy. This soap opera stardom that you've fallen into, and the lack of funds and finance and budget for these shows. So, I mean, is there this big misconception that, oh, Kobe Ryan McLaughlin, he's famous, he's rich, he lives in a mansion in the Hollywood Hills, he doesn't have a care in the world. I mean,
fucking wish. Shit.
Misconception to that, is there a mindset that people assume that you are?
Well, yeah, well, I'll say this now to everybody who's listening. If you find my mansion in the Hollywood Hills and my that rich life, I don't know where I put it. So can you please return it to me? I've been looking for it for years. I fucking don't know where I left it. So, shit. You know, it's often like the misconception of when people will come up to you and I and they'll be like, well, you're an actor. It must be so easy. Oh, it must be so cush. It must be so glamorous. There's nothing. No, man. I mean, this is, you know, just like, it's like, you know, like when you go to a really nice hotel.
Sure.
This is what I like in our career too. And this just popped into my head. You go to like the Four Seasons and you're at the front desk and then all of a sudden somebody runs out of paper or something and like the door opens to go into the back office.
Oh, yeah.
Behind the front desk. Yes. And it's like a shithole back there.
Yes.
And you're like, oh my God, it looks like a Motel 6 back there. What the fuck? Ew. Like the walls are like fucking stained and shit. But on the facade, it's really super fancy. Mm-hmm. That's like what it's like. You know, like it looks cool. And because all people see are like magazine covers. And
right.
They see us walking carpets and they see us doing that shit. But no, man, I mean, they don't see what you and I do. They don't see you and I. I mean, how many times when we were doing Saving Westbrook were we sitting on fucking Apple boxes in that junior high school with no air conditioning,
exactly,
sweating our nuts off in the middle of fucking August?
Right. Our dressing rooms were classrooms that we shared with each other.
Yeah. There you go.
The wardrobe was a desk that we laid our own clothes on.
Yes.
There's no wardrobe. We provided our own wardrobe for that show.
Yes, we did. I mean, but that's the fun part about it. But the misconception is strong, I think. Yeah, I grew up in Chicago, Missouri. I spent my formative years in the Midwest.
Okay, well then so you were born in Woodland Hills and then you...
I was born in Woodland Hills and then my mom married my stepdad. My stepdad was in corporate restaurants.
Oh, okay.
So it brought us to the Midwest because he had a corporate gig with McDonald's.
Gotcha.
So I grew up in Chicago and Missouri and then came back to California for a minute in the late 80s and then moved back to Illinois and then Pennsylvania. I drove cross country with one of my best friends, Jesus, 20 years ago.
You drove across the country with Jesus?
I did.
Did he drive or did you drive? Jesus was your co-pilot.
Well, he was. He was rolling the joints while I was driving.
Oh man,
one of my best friends and I did that. We drove cross country and we took all two lane highways and avoided all major interstates and really got a taste of, you know, what it was like, because I'd never been cross country, and it's amazing. You know, I know for me, I become so myopic living in Southern California because it's so big. Like, you can go, you know, 5 hours won't get you. I mean, fuck, you live in Europe, 5 hours, be in another fucking country.
Oh, yeah.
Here, 5 hours, you're in Sacramento. And you're like, Jesus Christ, it's just, I didn't leave.
Right.
So it's amazing what's between here and New York. And, oh my God, you know, it was truly epic. So we hit all of these spots. So I went back to Illinois. We drove through Chicago. I tried to find my old house, which I couldn't find because this was, you know, before, you know, Google Maps and shit. And it's amazing. It's nice to get out of town. I did NCIS New Orleans.
Yes.
Wow, that town is fucking epic. It's like Chicago.
Yes.
But dirtier.
In a good way.
Oh, in the best way possible.
How did you end up in Pennsylvania for college? Where did you go to school?
I was Penn State.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I don't even know how I got in. It was a mystery to me and my parents. They were like, huh.
But did you go there to study acting?
No, I went. I had graduated high school in Pennsylvania, and my folks. I was there.
Okay.
So it was my. I left my senior year of high school.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Excuse me. I was in Santa Barbara from my sophomore and my junior years of high school, and then I was uprooted my senior year of high school, and I finished I did that in Pennsylvania, and my dad lived there. My dad was working for Wendy's at the time.
Okay.
So he had gotten this new gig, and yeah, we ended up there, and it was a lot of fun growing up the way that I grew up, because I got to experience a lot of different people. I got to experience a lot of different places. It gave me a little perspective, especially with what it is that, you know, my chosen profession.
Now, were you planning on pursuing this at that point?
No, I didn't know what I wanted to do. This didn't come to me until a couple of years later when I moved back to Southern California, and I was a host at a restaurant in Santa Clarita in Valencia. And this guy walked in one day, and he would come in when it was dead, like after the lunch rush before dinner, and he would just sit at the bar and have a beer and watch college football. And we would talk about Penn State games because it turns out we had both gone to Penn State. And then finally, he had lived above the bar that I would pass out at. A place called the Rathskeller, which is still there, by the way.
All right.
And I asked him what he had done, and he told me that he was an acting coach. And I was like, oh, wow. I mean, I want to do that. And he said, well, you can come to class if you answer me a single question. Okay. He said, why do you want to be an actor? And he goes, you don't have to answer the question now. He goes, but you have to answer truthfully. And if it's the right answer, you can come to class. So think about it. I'll be back next week. And I was like, ooh, okay. All right. I thought about it. And I was like, man, is this what I want to do? Like, I thought about all the bullshit excuse. Like, I thought about, like, feeding him a line of shit. And
right.
My intuition told me that this was not a guy to bullshit. So he came back, and I just said, listen, it's just what I want to do with my life. It's like I want to learn something, and I want to devote my life to learning something. And it's what I want to be. And he said, okay, all right, well, come to class. And I went to class, and his name was John Homa. And he was the coach, and this was in the late 90s. He coached every young actor in Hollywood. It's like I walked through the door, and there was Johnny Galecki, and there was Freddie Prinze Jr., and Sarah Michelle Gellar was there, and Kirsten Dunst was there when she was a little girl. She had just finished doing Interview with a Vampire, and Tina, like everybody who was everybody, Eric Balfour, everybody.
Oh my God, yeah.
Was there and sitting in one room, and I was like, I know all these people. And I stayed there for a decade.
Damn.
Yeah, until I learned the nuts and bolts, man. Right. And he was the head acting coach at General Hospital. So ironically, I used to go to the building we shoot in. Mm-hmm. Man, I was there twice a week just to get coached for other stuff. And his room, his dressing room, is catty-cornered to the dressing room I have today.
Full circle.
Full fucking circle.
Look at that.
So weird. It's very strange.
Were Freddie Prinze Jr. and you know, all those, and Johnny Galecki, were they who they were at that point, or were they just kind of like, eh?
No. They had some early successes. They had all been working since they were kids. Freddie was kind of new to it, but his star was on the rise at that point. And it was really interesting to see how that affected. Also, I remember how it affected them as young adults. And it was interesting because it was something that I wanted so badly, but there was also something telling me that it was like, eh.
Yeah. How was it for you when you first started then in LA at that time? Did it take a while?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I started in class. I didn't work for 2 years.
Right. I looked at, of course, your IMDb page goes all the way back to the beginning, and I loved that you had some really wonderful no-name roles in.
Oh yeah.
And hold on, let me go back. These are great. You were young agent on The X-Files. You were roommate applicant on Jack and Jill. I mean, those are the character names that I love. I love. And I'm so happy. I really am. I'm ecstatic that you started from scratch, just like everybody else. I found another interview that you did where you referred to yourself as a journeyman actor. You said you had been doing this for 25 years, which I love that. I totally love. I mean, I respect everybody in this business, but I love the people like you who you're just, no matter what, like they're going to have to set you on fire, I feel, in order to get you out of this profession.
More with Kobe in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network, and they're adding new ones all the time, showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. Shout outs! Okay, one of my favorite shows is back on HBO, Succession, in its second season. I love this show. Tons of you may have seen, like Nick Reynolds, who plays Man on the Street in episode 2 of this season. You may have seen him as Jimmy in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and my favorite, as White Man Number 5 in The Nick on Cinemax. Also, Nadia Quinn, who plays Paula Conroy in episode 3 of Succession. You may have seen her as Ava's mom on the TV series Bull, Sloane's sister on This Is Us, and Streetwalker Doris in the upcoming West Side Story remake. So many hardworking actors out there trying to build a career in this industry. I'm just trying to bring some attention to as many as I can. Okay, more with Kobe Ryan McLaughlin.
Well, we're the same. I mean, you and I, it's the same thing. I mean, right. like once you do this, you know, I'd always tell my friends, well, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I would use all these fucking cliches. And, you know, I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine who's helping me put something on tape yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, about, I would say that shit in my 20s, but I didn't know what it meant. Mm-hmm. And I would say it in my 30s, and I still didn't know what it meant. And now I'm 25 years into this bitch, and mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's what it means. It means that, you know, that this goes on forever if mm-hmm. you so choose. And there's no time limit. So Bruce Dern was interviewed. I kind of went down the rabbit hole, and I was just looking for anything on the movie. And Bruce Dern was interviewed, and the interviewer said, "So, what are you ever going to retire?" And he goes, "What?" He goes, "Let me tell you something." He goes, "There's two things I love: acting and running." He goes, "I've run probably over 105,000 miles." Wow. He goes, "But as an actor," he goes, "I'll never retire." Because that career-defining role mm-hmm. is always around the corner. It doesn't matter how old you are. You never know when it's going to come.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, and you'll be able to relate to this when you see it. Leonardo DiCaprio does a great job of conveying that feeling of becoming, you know, when you and I were in our 20s and our 30s, we were fucking hot. We were rolling and it would never end. And all of a sudden you start to get a little older and the tide starts to change and people's tastes start to change. And you might be caught out on the other side of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it becomes one of those, there's a lot of, at least for me, there's a lot of doubt associated with that. Fuck, am I doing the right thing? Am I ever going to work again? I mean, how am I going to pay my fucking bills? I mean, does anybody even care?
Yes.
I mean, am I good enough to keep doing this? Fuck, why hasn't anybody called? I mean, like all that self-doubt shit. Dude, it's pervasive. And when you're able to move past that or even just talk to people who are in the same position, it's like, oh, okay, this is just a moment.
I'm up to here in that right now. I really am. It's been going on for a while. And that's my day-to-day right now.
Sure. It's just a moment. And what we fail to realize is the fact that it is a fucking marathon and there's a long time where we're in our fucking prime, dude. So this is just, this is that big on the timeline of what we're doing. It's just fucking that much.
I love you for saying that. And I appreciate you saying that. I had a conversation with a production guy a couple of years ago. You know, we were working on something and just in between takes, he stopped and he said, "Do you ever think that, your best work is behind you?" He's like, "Do you ever feel it? You ever wonder if you've already peaked as an actor and your best work is already done?" And I was just like, talk about taking the pin and popping the balloon. I was like, oh my God.
Well, you know what you do. Well, you know what you do in that situation?
Punch the guy in the face?
You call the fucking AD over and have his ass fired. That's what you fucking do. Fuck that guy. Whatever, Keith. Whatever, fucking lighting guy. Go fuck yourself. Shit. Oh, my God.
That was a tough one, man. And he may have just been like, just truly just like, whatever. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't actually think this, but he's like, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't mean anything by it. But...
Well, no, man. No, those questions, yeah. I mean, believe me, I think we all fucking think that way, man.
What do you do in the downtime? What are you going to be doing after August 19th? What happens next?
Since I have my daughter, a lot of my attention is focused on that. She's going to be going to school, and she's going to be in third grade. And
oh my God,
yeah, it's incredible. So I kind of have to, you know, I just can't sit at home sometimes like I want to and just cry in my soup and just be like, oh, what the fuck am I going to do? You know, I don't know, man. I don't know what I'm going to do. There was a time, like right before I got General Hospital, I'm really big into cars. So I was literally a day away from going down to my local Porsche dealer and just being like, hey, you guys hiring? Like, wow. You guys want like a brand specialist? Yeah. Or, you know, I've done it before. It's just, you know, anything to pay your bills.
Right. Now, has GH given you a little bit of breathing room?
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit of breathing room for now? That's good.
Yeah, it's given me a cushion, which is nice. You know, I'm lucky that I have people that I have good representation too, who tries to keep me busy.
That's great.
You know, I've gotten past the point of, well, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to go out for that. I'm going to pass on that. I mean, there's very few things that I'm like, no, if they send it, I go,
right.
I go just to do it. You know, Michael Caine said one of the reasons why there's so much shit on his resume is because he was afraid he was never going to work again.
Yep. I started saying yes to things that I was saying no to before for the same reason.
Yeah. But, you know, dude, you never know. You never know what's going to get you
exactly
where you want to be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ever.
So your daughter is what, 8 now?
She's 8.
Oh, my God.
8. I know.
Does she get it? Does she get this whole thing, this whole world that you're a part of, like what daddy does and you being on TV and all that stuff?
She comes with me all the time. In fact, I'm balls to the wall next week. I've got 9 shows next week. I'm doing 9. So I'm working Monday through Friday, you know, 3 shows a day.
Yeah.
Or 2 shows a day. And she comes and she hangs out. And you know, the makeup girls make her up and the hair guy does her hair. And
nice.
She sits on set and she watches me. And yeah, she gets it. And when she wants to piss me off, she calls me Shiloh.
Oh.
She's like, Daddy, I want to be a singer. I'm going to be in a band. And I'm like, okay, yeah, yes, I'm all for that.
All right, you just took me there. I didn't even have to bring it up. I forget that, too, that you're a fucking singer. Like, you've been blessed with everything.
I love you.
A singer, too. And I, because, I mean, I saw stuff that you've been posting. Because right up until before GH started for you, you were pretty busy doing music gigs and things like that. So how did that make all that just come to a screeching halt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could no longer juggle that.
Yeah.
We were about to go into the studio and record a record, and I had just started GH, and it was actually this was right at my birthday actually. So this was in May that this came to an end, but it was one of those things where we were so hyper-focused musically with what we were doing. We were together 3 days a week for 3 hours a night. And
this isn't Analog Smith, is it?
No, the Analog Smith ended in 2010.
Okay, okay.
This was a band I was in called the Cowboy Killers, which was great.
Okay.
And you can still find us on Instagram under the Cowboy Killers. It was one of those things where I really had to choose, and it was really difficult. Since I was contractually obligated to my job,
yeah,
I couldn't go tour. I couldn't go do jack shit. And it was
right.
It was really difficult, so I just kind of had to stop.
That's gonna be tough for you, man, because I know what a big commitment it is to put a band together, and you know
it sucked. It was really difficult, but it was like it was just not doable. Like I did not have enough hours in the day, and it was getting me, and it was affecting my job. Like casting called me more than once and was like, "Hey, you need to be on top of your dialogue more." I'm like,
wow.
Oh shit.
Wow.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You got to have your shit tighter, man, when you come into work. And I was like, fuck, I just don't have any more time. Like, so yeah, something had to give, and it wasn't the thing that was going to be able to support me or my lifestyle now.
Right.
So I'd stop.
Do you still take classes or do things like that? Do you still work on it in some way?
No, I don't take classes now.
Right.
I've been looking for actually something, but I didn't want to do I'm looking for something. I didn't want to do scene study classes. I'd done those for so long, and I do it on a daily at work. So I've been looking for something that I haven't been able to quite find yet, which is more like a psychological approach to what it is that we do. Would you go back?
To New York?
Yeah.
No, I mean, no, I had just come back right before you and I met. I had been there for a few years, and it's just that I feel like I got there, not even I feel, I know, I got there too late in life. I even had people tell me that. They're like, man, you're wonderful, why are you just getting here now? Mm-hmm. There are this many people ahead of you, so you're going to have to wait for these people to basically drop off and die before you can get in the room. You know?
Who told you that?
Quite a few people, actually.
Fuck those people. Those, the people who tell you shit like that are the people who don't have the balls to do it the fucking selves.
Well, these were quote unquote industry people.
Great. There's a lot of industry people. It's a big industry.
Yeah. And, you know, after 4 years in New York for me, it was just, you know, I'm 40 years old, 41 years old and at the time. And it was just like, what's more important to me? And at the time it was like my sanity. You know,
I get that
the shit that you have to put up with to live in New York,
yeah,
was just not worth it for me at the time.
I get that
stuff was going on down here in the Southeast. North Carolina was booming, so was Georgia, so was that, like, so my people down here were like, oh my God, we have so much. There's so much more that we could do with you if you were back home, but it's completely up to you. And it just, you know, all the timing would just happen. It was all in the timing at that time. Like,
yeah.
I was in a bad place in New York. My landlord showed her crazy side, and I was like, I think it's time to go. I'm out of here.
And you know. And when you fucking know, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't miss New York. I don't miss living in New York City, but I do miss, you know, a lot of the stuff that's there artistically, creatively. Yeah, I do miss that. Wow, you turned it around on me. Look what you did. You dirty bastard. You dirty bastard. That's good. Hey, man, do you have any of those earlier jobs that – is there anything out there that you did back in the beginning that you're like, oh, please, God, don't let anyone see this? Do you have any of those?
I think last week's General Hospital. I always think that. Now we live in the age, though, so I don't get, like, any of the GH stuff. Like, I can't – you can't see – what are the downsides of doing this medium is that you can't watch playback, so you don't know how to make adjustments. Okay. And there's no director. There's no fucking direction at all.
Yeah.
It's like you just go. And if it's too much, nobody says anything, so there's zero barometer. So there's this one scene where I'm getting choked, and as I'm getting choked once again by – the amazing, wonderful, lovely, incomparable Steve Burton. Truly is one of the nicest guys I have ever met. Really awesome dude. As I'm getting choked, I say the line of dialogue is, kill me and Sam dies. And I'm getting choked, though, so I sound like a Jewish grandmother. It sounds like this. Kill me and Sam dies. Kill me and Sam dies.
You channeled your inner Harvey Firestein.
I shit you not, dude. You got to watch it. It's fucking – I watched it like 5 times and I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, no.
Kill me at Sam Joy.
Yes, I turned into Harvey Firestein. That's exactly who I turned into. Holy fuck.
That's going to become a meme or a GIF or something like that.
It's hard, dude. I've already tried to get in front of it. Well, I watched it. And I called myself out. I'm like, oh my God, I sound like a Jewish grandmother who smoked 20 packs of cigarettes, like with a big, you know, smiley face, laughing, you know,
that is
tears
awesome.
Streaming down face emoji.
That is great.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, all the fucking time, you know? I mean, it's always that thing to try to get a little bit better and just to try to move forward and learn something new. And
right.
You know, I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine yesterday about this job and what the reason for this job was. And, you know, there's a lot of, I think a lot of times we take gigs and we're like, well, what the fuck did I do that for? What the fuck was that even for? And then all of a sudden you have to try to stand back and take yourself out of the equation and look at it from a different perspective. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. It was for this, 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 and this. And it's like, you know, why did I do daytime? I didn't want to fucking do daytime TV. Why did I ever do? And it's like, well, you paid your fucking mortgage for the next year.
Yes.
You got in, you worked with some incredible actors. You learned how to think on your feet. You no longer are... You know, you get an 8-page audition scene, and it's just like, I'll look at it before I go in. Yeah, I don't have to spend any time on that shit anymore because now it's like, you know, dude, I have to memorize 15 pages. On an easy day, it's 15 pages of dialogue.
How do you make that jump on a day when you're shooting that much for different episodes? How the hell do you keep it straight as, like, where am I in the storyline?
I do one a day. I'll read the scripts for the week, and it's like, oh, okay, that's where I'm going to be on Friday. But as far as, like, concentrating on it, I just look at today, Like I'm gonna look at Monday's stuff, or I don't go back to work till Friday, so I'm gonna look at Friday's stuff and just look at Friday's stuff in the next couple of
weeks. Okay, so they don't have you jump to multiple episodes in one shoot day.
No.
Okay.
No, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. It's like, I know next Monday I'm shooting three shows.
Right.
I don't know, man. I just it's kind of like a prefab house. You know, they assemble it. They put everything together.
Right.
From the factory, and then they ship it out in pieces, and then they put it all together in the edit. And they edit on the fly. So it's the editors who are the true fucking stars of that show. Like, it's amazing.
When I was working on As the World Turns that day that I was there, it was the craziest thing where the guy who was the handsome leading man in that particular scene, you know, everything was getting close to lighting the candle. And the dude was there, and it all took place in a restaurant diner set. Mm-hmm. And the guy was running his lines to a chocolate cake.
Yeah.
But that's got to be a little bit of occupational hazard just because, again, of the soap opera machine and how it works. I'm sure after a while it's like, I've got too much to remember. Connecting with you? No, I'm sorry. We'll do that another time.
Yeah, no, it's true. I get it. Like, I now understand. I understand. But that's also one of the reasons why I had a good time. I'm glad I'm moving on.
So how do you top crazy-ass Shiloh in General Hospital? How do you top that?
Oh, fuck, man. You know what? I'll tell you when it happens. When I get that next job and I'm playing somebody else.
Well, man, I really, really look forward to it. Kobe, it was so great to catch up with you and talk to you. I'm so grateful for you taking the time to sit down and explain all the ins and outs of your life in LA and the crazy behind the scenes of working on a soap opera. I know that there's going to be more for you. I can't wait to see what happens next. You know I love you and I wish you the best always. I'm always in your corner rooting for you.
Oh, Brian, I so appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for extending the invitation to do this. This was a blast. I love it. Thank you so much, man.
This has been You May Have Seen with Kobe Ryan McLaughlin. Thanks so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout out in the next episode.